where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is The Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
Hey, now, episode 3 of the day, because we record 4 of them in one day for the whole month. So hello, future. Not the rapper, the future of our society. I'm Scott, she's Allison. We just returned from Vegas. That's all you need to know.
Now it's been 3 weeks.
Well, now, yeah, if you time the episode, at least 3, if not
hopefully
4.
Hopefully it's summer here, or at least warm.
We ate at a new place, and we are victims of habit. There's 4,000 places to eat in Vegas, and we go to 4 of them. Like we did because we love it so much, and we stick to what we like. So we expanded our horizons this time and went to the brand spanking new, right out on the strip, Hell's Kitchen at Caesar's Palace. The Gordon Ramsay restaurant. He was not there. And we tried it, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was incredible.
It's really good.
It was way better. I think I had this kind of expectation that it was going to be, I knew it was really busy, but I assume that was the celebrity aspect of it. I know the show was really popular.
We had to eat at 4:45 p.m.
Yeah, so, but I think part of me was thinking, okay, this is going to be like cool to go to the restaurant and see what they've done, because they've made it look like the TV show, like half is blue and half is red, and yeah. I thought it would be cool. But I didn't think the food was going to be as good as it was. The food, even if it was like a little tiny restaurant, had none of the cool stuff in it, I would go back to eat the food because it was so good.
I had the famous beef Wellington. Phenomenal. And the sticky toffee pudding, which was sticky and very sweet and very good.
Yeah, delicious.
Yeah, so well done.
Yeah, a new if you go to Vegas, you should go.
To add to our repertoire on top of Nobu and Bacchanal. Yep, that's your Vegas report. That's all we got for today.
Yeah. We could talk about some other things.
Oh, yeah. Today on the show, things.
Do I have the first thing or do you have the first thing?
I'll jump in with this one.
Okay.
It's from CNN. T-Mobile fined $40 million for false rings. Now, here's the question. What do you think false rings means in a context of a phone company? Wayne? Wayne's just grasping at straws right now. Wayne's got no bars coming up right now. He's got no bars. No.
Cell phone, I just assume
cell phone joke.
No signal.
Right.
I just assume rings on a phone is going to be like they're calling you and it's not real.
So this is the settlement announced Monday by the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, also requires T-Mobile to implement a compliance plan. False ringtones are used to make it seem like someone isn't answering the phone when in fact the call was unable to go through. This means a person trying to call someone in a rural area with spotty coverage would hear multiple rings and assume the other party was just unable to answer. Quote, false ringtones also create a misleading impression that a caller's service provider is not responsible if the call fails. False ringtones are a problem on calls to rural areas and are a symptom of the problems of impaired quality and completion of calls to those areas.
Because usually if you couldn't get through because of the person on the other side, like if you have your phone turned off because you're on stage, let's say, and I try to call, it doesn't ring. It goes right to your voice message.
So it's trying to make them look better.
Wow, that's skeezy.
I've gotten some people in trouble.
They probably could have spent the money and energy it took to develop that sneaky technology and just improve their rural lines.
Yeah, and top off, it was $40 million on top of that. Yoach. I still give them $80 a month.
Do.
It's cheaper for me to have an American pay-as-you-go plan than it is to roam from here.
Canada.
Good times.
Great healthcare. Expensive cell phones. This is from SmithsonianMag.com. It says, this artist is the only person banned from using the world's pinkest pink. Anish Kapoor has long been known for his large-scale, intensely colored works, but his penchant for being proprietary has long irked others in the art world. But then came Vanta Black. Earlier this year, Kapoor sparked outrage from artists all over the world with the announcement that he had made a deal to become the only person in the world allowed to use the blackest pigment of black paint ever developed. Known as,
it can get none more black.
Yeah, known as Vanta Black, the unique carbon nanotube-based pigment is produced solely by a British company called Nanosystem and was originally developed for military technologies. However, Kapoor made an agreement with the company that he is the only person allowed to use it for artistic purposes. Needless to say, this made plenty of other artists furious. And so it goes on to have a few quotes from artists just super angry about all of these rules. And so one of the artists named Semple, it says, when I first heard that Anish had exclusive rights to The Blackest Black, I was really disappointed, said artist Stuart Semple. I was desperate to have a play with it in my own work, and I knew lots of other artists who wanted to use it too. It just seemed really mean-spirited and against the spirit of generosity that most artists who make and share their work are driven by. Like Kapoor, Semple's work often uses vivid shades of color, and for years he worked with scientists to develop increasingly intense pigments to use in his artwork. So as a response to Kapoor's exclusive deal with Vantablack, Semple decided to release his own special pigment, known simply as pink. While pink isn't based on nanotechnology, Semple says it is the pinkest pink pigment ever created. Now, in an effort to thumb his nose at Kapoor, Semple is making it for sale for everyone in the world except Kapoor. He's selling it through his website for £4 a pot, which is about $5. However, before purchasing the powdered pigment, buyers have to agree to a legal disclaimer that states they have no intention of letting it fall into Kapoor's hand. The website states, by adding this product to your cart, you can confirm that you are not Anish Kapoor, you are in no way affiliated with Anish Kapoor, you are not purchasing this item on behalf of Anish Kapoor or an associate of Anish Kapoor. To the best of your knowledge, information, and belief, this paint will not make its way into the hands of Anish Kapoor.
Wow. It's fantastic.
And he says that if Kapoor will give up his exclusive rights to Vantablack, then he will happily give him all the pink that he wants. I didn't know that there were artist battles like this. No. I didn't ever thought about how black something is.
I think he's right. There's something about this that's so black. It's like, how much more black could this be? And the answer is none. None
is that good?
More black.
None more black.
I never thought about it. No. And the idea that, I guess though, if you're that's what you're known for is these vivid colors, then you'd want the blackest and the pinkest and the reddest are all different hues. I don't know. I think it's hysterical.
Remember when we at CES a couple of years ago, we used to write the Martha Stewart filament for 3D printers and her colors. She owned the rights to those colors. She does, doesn't she?
She doesn't have like a I don't think she has like a like Tiffany blue.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
I don't think you're allowed to use that color in marketing stuff. I'm not sure of the rules. I don't know if Martha has colors that are trademarked to her.
Because when we were at the Consumer Electronics Show, there was a booth there. It was Martha Stewart filament for 3D printers, which is how we got connected with Martha Stewart.
But she makes paint and different things in those colors, too. Like, she has a paint line. Mm-hmm. You can go buy, I think it's Bear that makes it for her. You can go buy Martha Stewart colors.
Huh.
But I think you can also just mix the color. Like, you could give it to someone who knows about color, and they could match the color. She doesn't own the color.
Interesting.
This is the only thing I've ever heard of somebody actually owning a color.
Interesting. Very interesting. This is from The Star, TorontoStar.com. Nova Scotia man no longer banned from Victoria's Empress Hotel 17 years after seagulls trashed his room. A Nova Scotia man was banned from the Victoria's stately Fairmont Empress Hotel, which is a beautiful place, is welcome back after apologizing for an incident more than 17 years ago, in which seagulls hungry for pepperoni trashed his room in a rock star frenzy. Nick Burchill of Dartmouth says in a letter to the hotel, he was young and immature in 2001, weren't we all, Nick, and unaware of the aggressive nature of West Coast seagulls. As opposed to the ones in his home on the East Coast who
they just need the pepperoni and they gotta have it.
Especially when tempted with a suitcase full of fresh pepperoni near an open window.
Quote, we can go into why he had a suitcase of fresh pepperoni near an open window another
disclosed.
Time.
I remember walking down the long hall and opening the door to my room to find an entire flock of seagulls in my room, stated Burchill's letter. I didn't have time to count, but there must have been 40 of them, and they'd been in my room eating pepperoni for a long time. He said he startled the gorging birds, which is when things really got out of control. They immediately started flying around and crashing into things as they desperately tried to leave through the room through the small opening by which they had entered. The result was a tornado of seagull excrement, feathers, pepperoni chunks, and fairly large birds whipping around the room.
Oh my gosh.
Tracy Drake, the hotel's PR director, said Monday that there were thoughts that this was an April Fool's Day prank, but a check of the records and Burchill's appearance at the front desk last weekend confirmed the seagull story and the former guest's permanent ban. It's absolutely all true, she said. Burchill was in Victoria for a conference and was booked to stay at the Empress back in 2001. After the room fiasco, he was moved to another room for the rest of his stay. The hotel followed up with his employer afterwards, saying he's not welcome back at the hotel due to the damage to his room. He's correct. The lamps were broken. The room was trashed. It's a really funny story to tell 17 years later, but I was sitting here thinking about the housekeeper and what her first reaction must have been when she opened that door. Birchill's letter stated he still remembers the dismayed look on the housekeeper's face when she walked into the room. I have matured and I admitted responsibility for my actions. I come to you, hat in hand, to apologize for the damage I had indirectly come to cause, and to ask you to reconsider my lifetime ban from the property. The letter was he sent to Empress and posted on Facebook, explained how to his plan to bring spicy Nova Scotia pepperoni to Victoria to share with friends stationed at the West Coast Naval Base went astray when he decided to cool the meat near the window because his room didn't have a fridge. Drake, let's talk about proper salami handling procedures here. Drake said the damage to the room was beyond description, but all is forgiven and Birchill's back on the guest list. The seagulls and the pepperoni flap isn't the only wild animal story to occur at the Empress. Almost 2 years ago, thieves stole an iconic Bengal tiger skin that was mounted on the wall of the hotel's Bengal lounge. The theft remains unsolved. In 1992, a cougar was spotted on the hotel grounds. Update to the story, though, my mom eventually went home.
Scott!
Hi-yo! That was an inspiration off of a meme from last week on the internet. So,
I was thinking that sometimes in hotels I complain about not being able to open the window because I like fresh air. Mm-hmm. And now I know why I can't open the window.
You can blame him.
Because of aggressive West Coast seagulls.
Nick.
Right? Oh my gosh, you just scared everybody. So sorry. Feel free to pause the podcast while get yourself back together. This is from thestar.com. Rogers Communication discovers it pays to invest in service.
What?
Spending on customer service helped Rogers Communication Inc. boost net wireless additions in the first quarter as it reported revenue and adjusted income that topped analyst forecasts, sending shares ahead by nearly 5% in extended trading. The Toronto-based company on Thursday posted a $425 million profit for the last 3 months ended March 31st, and that's up 37%. From the first quarter. And it says, according to new accounting rules adopted in the quarter, the wireless, cable, internet, and media company earned $477 million in that period, which just sounds like such a crazy amount of money to me, but that's, I guess, where all our phone bills go to.
Rogers being one of the two main giant cell phone companies and cable companies in our country.
So Joe Natale, CEO, called the bad reviews, bad points, let's say, they've been getting over the years, says, we are knocking down chronic customer service issues that have existed for a long time. Rogers said it added 95,000 postpaid wireless customers in the quarter versus 60,000 a year ago. The result comes after technical problems during a price war with rivals during the seasonally important December quarter cost Rogers with net additions, blah, 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 blah. So basically, they invested a bunch of money in hiring some new people and they've taken on more customers.
Amazing.
Shocking.
Amazing what happens. An industry of low customer satisfaction being just mediocre.
And high competition, though. Like, there's competition. Huge. Competitors everywhere.
Right. Well played.
Yeah.
It's amazing how that works. Like, I've been saying it for years.
At least they owned it as a chronic customer service issue.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of makes me happy. At least they see it's not, you know, one person or one department or something. It's a chronic problem.
But
it's an epidemic, as we talked about several episodes ago.
But that's one of the things that been talking about recently too, and that whole mind the gap thing of that sometimes to improve business we have to admit weakness, and it's hard for people. Hard for a business. Somebody has to at least themselves feel some sort of responsibility or blame. It's really hard. How many businesses stand up and say, yeah, that's on us, that's a bad move?
It's nice to see them doing that, to see it and
acting with some kind of purpose to saying, you know, does happy customers equal good customers? I just don't know why we keep having this discussion. It should literally be a no-brainer.
It should be, especially because I think customer service is one of the biggest pain points for people with cellular service. Like, you having to talk to rude people or not getting help or people who don't know what you're supposed to do or mixed messages or different information. Like, it's got to be a number one pain point with people.
And at least in Canada, it's much easier to change providers now. They put in some rules that allowed you used to where like the phone company owned your phone number.
Yeah.
And now you can easily just go from one carrier to another with the same number. That was the biggest part of the pain, right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully and that'll make them be nicer.
You can't lock phones to providers now too. So it's interesting. Very shift of a landscape. Still prohibitively expensive data in Canada, but still.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, I have a question for you.
I have an answer. Want me to do the answer first or do you want the question?
I want the answer first.
72 to 75 minutes at 350 degrees.
All right. This is from Joy O'Shaughnessy. It says, we produce conferences. As a speaker, how do you feel about the event producers selling a digital pass to a video to watch your session after the event? Do we as producers own the video, or do you think special permission or payment to a speaker is required? And the reason why I want to talk about this is it's a very niche question about someone organizing an event, but I think it speaks a lot to what are you worth and setting your time and deciding how you make money and what you want to give away for free, right? That we talk about giving a lot. So what do you want to, where do you draw that line around? What are the things you will be paid for? And what are the things you're willing to, let's say, if the video gets shared a lot, that could right. bring you more customers. So I'm interested in your answer.
I'm
375. Actually,
yeah, I'm going to go with 375 instead.
Yeah.
For 80 minutes. So I, whatever I say right here is not across the board for everybody in the speaking business. But I just don't care. Meaning that my job is to go give a keynote. And I'm paid very well to do that. And that's all I want to do. And if you then have use a video, share it, put it out there, show how much fun your conference was, give it as a recording to people who had already gone, or sell it as a digital recording to people who didn't go, or live stream it or anything else, none of that matters to me. Now, I know it's a point of sensitivity in this industry and speaking where some are no recording, boom, shut it down real quick. That used to be in my contract. It was a default contract from the bureau. And somebody came up and said, I know you don't want it to be recorded. I'm like, what are you talking about? My business card, my best advertising is a video of me at a conference. The more people to see it, the better. Now, I'm running into the issue right now. The problem is old video from 7 years ago of me is not representing my content or ability at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to see me ranting about QR codes and Twitter and everything else because that's not really the topics I speak on at this point. People see it, they're like, well, we don't need that. And if it's your conference's YouTube page or something, then I don't have control over that video. One of the things I want to be able to is to request to remove it or make it hidden so it's not publicly searchable, but people who get the link can still see it. And I also don't ever stress on another speaker who does say no filming or it'll cost you extra. And there's a difference between a nonprofit, who doesn't mean they don't have money, but a nonprofit or a charity or something using a video and helping them recoup costs from the event. Events are very expensive to put on. Your admission, your general admission pass does not even cover your cost to be at this thing. Most associations aren't doing it as a profit generator or anything else. They're doing it because they're an association. It's what they do. And if you are a public company, one that sells tickets to events and the event is your business, well, then maybe you do want to share in on that because you paid me for the keynote. But look, YouTube's never replacing me at an event. They're not going to play a video of me at their event.
Do you want to be told? Do you think part of it is disclosure?
I think
that people sometimes get angry because they find out that after they did a keynote that this something was used in a way that they didn't know was going to be used?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also there's so many dependents, right? Is it available only for your association members? Is it available? Is it accessible to the public? Is there proprietary stuff in the talk?
Is it the whole talk or a clip?
Right.
Like, there's a lot of different ways to do it.
But for me, it's also part of my personality is I'd rather get the view of seeing me speak than lock it down and say it's my stuff.
Do you think it would be different too if we had any kind of back end at all? Like, we don't sell any consulting. We don't sell videos of us doing things. It's not like we take you on stage and we do a program and then we sell it. So there's no competition at all from us in any kind of video So I wonder how much of that is also a part of why some people, maybe with agencies or things, like they don't want that competition in any way. They want to own the property. They want
to
own
right. You don't, you have to be able to get access to it. You have to buy it. But I just think most e-learning or online courses too aren't videos of talks. They're videos of you talking to the camera and doing the lesson. So I still think there's a difference. I think any kind of a talk, especially a keynote, is just a taste of something. And it's a 45 minute to an hour, you know, view from 30,000 feet above. And I'm okay with it.
I would think for Joy, with her question, thank you for asking it, is I think to remember to just be clear with the speaker when you're making plans to hire them about what you expect from them. It's like anything else. It's much more complicated after the fact. It's much more complicated when your speaker is about to go on stage, they don't want to be filmed, and they look out and you're filming it. That's not the situation you want to get in. So I would just make sure that if you are thinking about recording and either using it, like putting it up for free just to share it, or selling it, or giving it to private members as an extra or whatever, to make sure that you're very upfront with the speaker, because every speaker is going to feel differently about it. And that will be a big piece, I think, of the puzzle of making it all work.
Yeah, I get flattered by it. A couple of years ago, I spoke at NSA, the unfortunate acronym for the National Speaker Association. And myself and Connie Podesta were the two voted most favorite talks at the conference. So they took that and mailed it out to all the members to watch on their own. They never asked me to do that. They were, I get it. It's my association. I understand that. But they sent it out on this weird kind of USB stick that nobody knew was USB stick. You had to pop it out of a thing and a holder. So like, yeah, nobody watched it. But I was flattered that it went out there anyways, that it was selected. So yeah,
I think for our business, the more people who can see you speak, the better. But 100%. I do understand why some people would not like it.
I don't fault anybody for not wanting it. Or I know friends of ours that have who make money on it.
Yeah.
Okay, if you want to use it for digital rights, it's going to be an extra $5,000. Yeah. Okay. Maybe I'm leaving $5,000 on the table everywhere I go with this. But it's just different. It's not the hill I want to die on. Yeah. You know what I mean? I just want it to be, I want to get the keynote. That's what I love. That's what I live for. And You got me there. You spent a lot of money doing that. Go ahead. Do what you want with it.
Cool. Thank you, Joy, for the question.
Thank you. This podcast is owned by Unmarketing, Inc. It's not to be rebroadcast or sold in any means necessary. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.